Hey, it's Luke Black, proud owner of The Marketplace. Since 1980, we've been your neighborhood sandwich shop. We're open Monday through Saturday for breakfast and lunch. If you're craving a fresh sandwich, salad, soup, or a hot cup of local roasted coffee, we've got it all made fresh daily. The Marketplace can cater your next event, from small office lunches to full wedding parties. You can rent our space for private gatherings after hours. You can find The Marketplace at 246 Olmsted Boulevard in Pinehurst. It's not just a sandwich, it's an experience.
This is Taking Aim, a weekly show hosted by David Hensley and Stephen Woodward. Join us for open season on hypocrisy, deception, woke culture, and uniparty cronies. We'll review the stories you might have missed and prepare you for what's to come in the week ahead. Taking Aim starts right now.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome back to your favorite Saturday morning program, heard exclusively here on WEEB. I am Steve Woodward. My co-host, David Hensley, is away. We thank you for joining us today as we do what we do best. I want to begin, of course, as always, by recognizing and thanking our sponsor of this program, The Marketplace Restaurant and Catering. Since 1980, your go-to for delicious restaurant, delicious lunch and breakfast items. They've rolled out some fabulous new breakfast burritos, which I urge you to check out. And then, of course, catering, whether it's the intimate office party or the wedding of the century, they can take care of you at The Marketplace off of Highway 211 in Pinehurst. Ladies and gentlemen, coming up today, we have two very special guests joining us for a long-form conversation about a topic that everyone needs to know more about and be aware of. That would be the human trafficking crisis that is not only prevalent across this country, but particularly troublesome here in the state of North Carolina. That's a fact. Coming up, our guest will be Kim Nixon, the co-founder and president of Changing Destinies Ministry, and a young lady who recently spoke during a Changing Destinies fundraiser here in Pinehurst, Christian Bumgardner Sullins, who is a survivor leadership spokesperson and motivator, a survivor herself of human sex trafficking from the age of 16 for a number of years until her mid-20s. A very inspirational figure. These ladies will be joining us shortly to talk about the work of Changing Destinies Ministry. You know, it's never a bad time to ask yourself this question: what is the status of my voter registration? You know, we know that it's very important that you always get out to vote when election season rolls around. But in many cases, folks even lose track of whether or not they're registered to vote. Well, there's a really easy way to figure all that out, okay? You can go to the North Carolina State Board of Elections website, ncsbe.gov. That's ncsbe.gov. And you can determine the status of your voter registration. And if you determine, lo and behold, I'm not registered to vote, what is wrong with me? Don't panic. They'll tell you what to do next. You can, if you're an existing NCDMV customer, meaning you have a license, you can avail yourself of the online voter registration application right there on the website. You just click on the link and lickety-split, you are on the road to registration. Or you can do so by mail. They have a couple of PDFs that you can click on at the site, print the form, fill it out, and mail it in. And just like that, you will be heading toward becoming a registered voter. And it's really important to keep up with that. There's nothing more sacred as an American citizen than your right to vote. And as we often see, voter apathy can be particularly damaging to the conservative Republican side of the ledger. Sometimes we need to wake up and get out there and vote. So please do so when the time comes, and make sure you're registered. Now, many of you probably wonder, you know, taking aim every week, we have such an abundance of timely insights and useful information. How do we do it? How do we do what we do? Well, ladies and gentlemen, I want to take a moment or two to just share with you some of my top sources for information. And I'm not talking about, no surprise, CNN, MSNBC. I'm not talking about the Raleigh News and Observer, the Charlotte Observer, or even, dare I say it, the Pilot newspaper. But I want to share with you where I go to stay informed and enlightened, and to read timely and scintillating commentary. I start most days on a site called Citizen Free Press. Citizen Free Press. You may recall the Drudge Report of yesteryear, where he literally would stack headlines one on top of the other, and you just click on the links. Well, Citizen Free Press uses a similar format. They will keep you informed on all things political, even some sports and entertainment news. And this guy, Citizen Kane is his name, literally. That's his screen name. He works tirelessly 20 hours a day curating headlines for your consumption. And I rely on Citizen Free Press every single day, even on weekends. I also like a similar site with a more of a local or a state flavor called Carolina Plot Hound. Carolina Plot Hound, similarly a Drudge Report kind of format with both national and also North Carolina-centric links to all manner of news organizations. I'm a frequent reader of the Epoch Times, E-P-O-C-H. It is a newspaper that is published and delivered once a week, typically on Thursdays. But, of course, the website, the Epoch Times website, is available 24/7. Not only do they cover politics as thoroughly as any news organization, but they are particularly a good source for international, global news and developments around the world, with a particular emphasis on the aims and objectives of the Chinese Communist Party, which we need to always keep an eye on those rascals, do we not? Another platform I like to visit is Substack.com. Substack is a community of writers and authors. Some of them are subscription only. Others give you some freebies. A particularly good one is Alex Berenson, who publishes Unreported Truths at Substack. Unreported Truths. He's actually a former New York Times reporter who became very fed up with the lefty biased news that was coming out of the Times and elsewhere. I follow A.P. Dillon at Substack. She's a North Carolina-based investigative reporter who does a lot of great work. A.P. Dillon. I follow Robert W. Malone on Substack. He was one of the biggest critics of the mRNA fake vaccines during the pandemic. He is a MD himself. And I also follow Longleaf Politics, authored by Andrew Dunn. He is a North Carolina-based political observer, and quite a keen one at that. During the day, when I'm not watching cable news, I am tuning in on the streaming service Real America's Voice. There I watch Steve Bannon's War Room every morning at 10 a.m. for 2 hours. The Charlie Kirk Show follows, and Charlie's colleagues are maintaining the show, and they're still referring to it in his honor as the Charlie Kirk Show. Then following that at 2 p.m. Eastern Time, I watch Human Events, hosted by Jack Posobiec, a former naval intelligence officer and one of the really bright young media stars with, you know, and very well known to those who also are devotees of the Charlie Kirk Show and his colleagues. So those are just a couple of areas that I look to for news and information, and I encourage you to do the same. Our guests this morning are Kim Nixon, the president and co-founder of Changing Destinies Ministry, and Christian Bumgarner Sullins, who is a survivor leadership advocate and speaker on the topic, on the tragic ongoing crisis of human trafficking in our state of North Carolina and around the country. Thank you both for joining us this morning. So, Kim, I love the story of your founding of Changing Destinies Ministry, which is based here in North Carolina. Recently, I had the pleasure of attending your benefit in Pinehurst at the Fair Barn, where I hope a lot of money was raised, both for your ongoing work, as well as the beautiful new facility that you have opened, Rachel's Refuge, which is a refuge for victims recovering from their human trafficking experiences. And before we get any deeper into this conversation, it's a topic that unfortunately remains very relevant and sort of a cloud that hangs over certainly the state of North Carolina and other places around the country as well. But let's get the definitions out on the table here. A lot of people are confused by the term human trafficking. Sometimes you have to be a little bit more graphic about it and say it's basically sex trafficking. Kim, what is your preferred way of describing the work that you do and why you do it?
Yeah, so human trafficking could be either sex trafficking or labor trafficking. And it's basically the selling of human beings to make a profit. So this industry it's prevalent globally. It's very sophisticated. It's very well organized. And it's lucrative for the people who are doing this thing. And it's extremely troubling. And I know Christian and I feel, and the people that we work with, want to see this thing eradicated in our sphere of influence the best that we can. So awareness is one of the greatest things that we can do in our community, is to teach people what human trafficking is, what it looks like, what a perpetrator can appear as, who can become a victim of these things. And I think that is extremely important in order to end this thing to the best of our ability.
So essentially we're talking about the enslavement of vulnerable individuals, both young women and men, young boys and girls, both.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So did I read somewhere that globally it's like a $150 billion industry? Is that possible?
Yeah, that's the estimate. And it's probably pretty accurate, because the statistics are collected by various global organizations, and they funnel down to the United States in terms of what is it globally and what is it in the U.S.
Right. Well, right here in North Carolina, and, you know, I'm like a lot of people who live in this state, and particularly here in central Moore County, North Carolina. We moved here from other presumably less desirable places, in my case, the greater Chicago area. And people move here from, you know, the Northeast and from California, and they're coming here for all kinds of different reasons. And we would like to think that North Carolina is a somewhat of a pristine sort of fairy tale place to live, with beautiful mountains, beautiful coastline, the beaches, the Atlantic Ocean, and then, of course, in between, quiet, friendly communities, great golf courses, all that stuff. And it's largely true. In fact, North Carolina annually is rated one of the top destinations for businesses seeking to expand in this country. They're coming to this state. Every year, North Carolina is highly, if not top rated, as the destination for business. And yet, there is the dark side. And the dark side is reflected by some of the data that we find from the National Human Trafficking Hotline. The most recent data is from 2024, in which there was 301 cases identified of human trafficking involving 580 victims. And that breaks down to 145 reported cases of sex trafficking, 73 cases of labor trafficking, and 38 cases of both, a combination of sex and labor trafficking. Now, you could say that in a state of millions of people, that's a fairly small number, but my view of it is that one of any of those is one too many, considering the horrific nature of what we're talking about here. So that leads me, Kim and Christian, to, I think, the elephant in the room question that I think every elected official in this state, whether it's at the municipal level, up in Raleigh at the General Assembly, or in the U.S. Capitol, our congressmen and senators, the question that they should be asked every time we encounter them is, how in the world do you not stop this? What are we doing? What steps are we taking to bring an end to this slavery, this sex and labor trafficking? You know, we can eradicate polio from the world. We can do a pretty good job of now finally closing our border from millions of people coming in from all over the place. But we can't put an end to this. Is that not the essential question, Kim?
It is. Human trafficking, because it's so prevalent, it's so lucrative, it's very difficult to eradicate when it's an industry that has such a return on investment. And you're talking about people who maybe fell on hard times or whatever the case may be, or just we live in a fallen world, honestly, and just this evil is becoming even more prevalent as we go, where people have no consideration for human value anymore. And so that they result with this sort of thing. But I think as awareness gets out there and people become more aware of what it is, that there's a rising interest in seeing this thing eradicated, because it's affecting our children and our families and people that we know. So a lot more people are getting on board with wanting to end this thing to the best of their ability.
And Christian, when you're out traveling and talking to organizations and survivors such as yourself, is there optimism? Is there hope that progress is being made, that all of this is actually making a difference?
Of course. I think that you always want to have that optimism. And I think the more that we educate survivors and inform people of what trafficking actually looks like, we are going to see more cases come to light. Like myself, I didn't know I was being trafficked until much later in life. And I think that's the case with most survivors.
Christian, we were talking a little earlier about the IPC program that has been certified in North Carolina. Can you, first of all, tell us what the acronym stands for and what the objectives of this program are?
Yeah, absolutely. So the IPC program stands for the Interdiction for the Protection of Children. And that is a program that is being conducted between the North Carolina Human Trafficking Commission and the Department of Public Safety to educate law enforcement on what human trafficking looks like, both from the victim services side, but also to understand what a perpetrator may or may not do, look like, behave, and how to understand what that might be at an interdiction traffic stop. This was started in the state of Texas, and they've had a lot of success in Texas, so they've decided to bring it to North Carolina and allow me and some other law enforcement trainers to become certified and teach that.
Well, it seems to me that that's the key to it, is being able to identify the signs that you're looking into the eyes of a trafficker who also may happen to have an expired license or was speeding or driving under the influence or whatever. But, you know, look beyond the obvious. I think that's what you're saying is the point of this program. And it makes a lot of sense. And it just, and to your point, I mean, we all support law enforcement, but they can never be too vigilant when it comes to figuring out who the really bad guys are. And I guess this program just sort of magnifies that for them.
Yeah, and I think, you know, there was not a lot of trauma-informed training in the past. And so with that, we teach them new ways of investigating rather than interrogating witnesses who may or may not be a victim at the time. By going in and collecting information, noticing red flags, how they talk or speak to a suspected victim in order to get the information that might be needed. These are all things that we work with them on during our training courses. But also what behaviors to look for, certain signs and signals. I also obviously can't go too in-depth because I wouldn't want to give away our specific training tactics.
Yeah.
But I will tell you that we've had many officers who have taken this class who are making arrests and changing lives and making rescues.
Kim, I wanted to briefly talk with you about the founding of Changing Destinies Ministry, which I guess it's accurate to say is based in Moore County. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. It was founded in 2013. You were a co-founder. I think it's safe to say that you didn't see this coming as the next chapter of your life. You spent a quarter century wearing the uniform and serving our country, at least maybe more than that. I believe your bio tells me that you were a U.S. Navy hospital corpsman for 24 years, serving our country in that capacity. So just briefly, talk to us about how you became aware of the plague of trafficking. I believe you had a personal experience with it. And then what motivated you to, you know, commit your livelihood and your life to raising money to stop it?
Right. So our organization is faith-based, and that's honestly extremely important to me because that's how it came to my attention. Just out of the blue in 2012, I started hearing about human trafficking in a relatively short period of time from different venues after a lifetime of not knowing what this was, which piqued my interest. And I started fasting and I started praying, and more information was revealed to me through that period of time, which led me to a symposium in Fayetteville. And I felt like human trafficking ministry is pretty broad. And I basically consulted with the Lord, what is my part in all of this? And I just felt this impression very strongly that I was supposed to open a shelter. So that was November 1st of 2012. And, throughout the years, that was kind of confirmed to me, but one of the biggest confirmations was learning a year after I co-founded Changing Destinies, as you said, it affected my own family. My oldest daughter revealed to me that this was something that had happened to her 12 years prior that she had never told anyone. And so that catalyst for, even though I didn't know she had been trafficked, I saw the devastation that it caused in her life. But I had no explanation for what it was. Once I knew what it was, and I had been working with other survivors, other shelters, other abolitionists throughout the state, I was going to symposiums and training, learning about what human trafficking was, I was able to that day immediately connect her with another person who was had a shelter in Asheville at the time. And through that, she was connected with other survivors, went through elevation training with Rebecca Bender, who is pretty renowned nationally with her anti-human trafficking initiatives. She really works with other survivors, and she certifies them to be able to share their stories, which the testimony of what happens to these survivors is critical, and the training that they're able to provide, like Christian coming to speak at our event, is so powerful because it really, as you said, puts a face to this vague concept of human trafficking. Now I'm looking at someone whose life was affected by this. And myself also with Christian having a daughter that was affected by this. It's more prevalent than you think. It's happening in every zip code in the United States, I guarantee it. And at that point, it became personal. And I decided to continue this fight, which it took 13 years from the time I felt led to open a shelter until we actually opened the shelter in March of this year. But it's worth it now that I'm able to actually see people come into this shelter and I'm seeing the transformation and the healing that's happening through a trauma-informed program that we're running. So Christian is a big part of the community that is being created here in Moore County. She's very well connected to different trainings that are happening and my organization, and it's powerful.
So you're telling me that that it's possible for a mother who has a daughter to be unaware that she is being trafficked.
Correct.
And what?
Absolutely possible.
And why is that? How is that possible, though? I mean, it's one thing if you're talking about a young, vulnerable woman who has been maybe just abandoned by her family for whatever reason. But it's another thing when you're talking about kids coming out of, you know, more stable environments. How do they pull that off, these traffickers?
Right. So my story is unique. I'm sure Christian can share other stories, how children living under their parents' roof, and we've heard these stories where they're trafficked by a gang, for example, during the weekend, go home, go to school. My situation was my daughter was 18. We stayed in an area where I was in the military, and I moved way across the state, and she stayed there, and just we weren't in contact closely during that period of time. This was in the early 2000s. So that's how it happened, where I wasn't aware of what was happening because she wasn't communicating it with me, mm-hmm. and I wasn't in the area where she was being trafficked to see any signs.
Right.
So, Christian, I don't know, you may have other examples where the parents were completely unaware that their child was being trafficked, but I know that it happened because it happened to me, so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, well, that's, you know, with my own family, I literally just told them about a year ago, and some of them still don't know my trafficking story. And like you were saying, kids from good, stable homes can be trafficked. My best friend, who is no longer with us, came from a very well-to-do family, lived in one of the nicest parts of Charlotte. She grew up very wealthy. So when she moved out on her own and she found it hard to stabilize and have the things that she wanted and needed, just supporting herself, working her way through college. She started modeling and things like that and was preyed upon, got jobs in nightclubs to, you know, be stable and try to make extra money. And that also played a big part in my trafficking story. It's very easy when you're young, you need money, and a lot of the other girls around you are saying, oh, well, you know, we do this. This is normal. Like, you know, don't feel weird about it. It becomes very normalized. And so you can get caught up in it very, very quickly and not even know it.
I want to remind everyone that we are talking this morning to Kim Nixon, the president and co-founder of Changing Destinies Ministry right here in Moore County, and with Christian Bumgarner Sullins, who is a survivor leadership advocate travels to meet with organizations and speak to organizations about the plague of human sex and labor trafficking in this state and elsewhere around the country. Here's a question that I think should be asked, and I kind of maybe already know what the answer is, but do you think that trafficking has actually been propped up or given an edge due to the prevalence of young people living their lives on the internet and in social media chat rooms and the like? Has that actually been a bit of a advantage for the trafficking industry?
I would love to tackle this, if you don't mind.
Oh, no, please do.
I absolutely believe that. I actually started trying to educate parents almost 5 years ago of the dangers of online apps and how traffickers were using that to lure children in. And that has actually, you know, tripled, if not doubled, over the last few years. I don't know if you guys tune into anything like Sean Ryan, but Ryan Montgomery recently did a great job of instructing parents, and I encourage anyone listening to this broadcast to jump on that and just listen as he goes in depth on how these traffickers are manipulating these systems.
Only fans for teens. I had no idea this was going on either.
So if you're not familiar with OnlyFans, it's a website where people can sell their bodies for money. That's for adults. There's a site called Brand Army. You can join the site as early as 13 years old, and they have a policy of how many bikini / revealing photos that you can post. You can post, let's say, one bikini photo, and then it has to be two normal photos, and then another photo that's revealing, and then two more normal photos. And these are 13-year-old girls or boys. The other part of it is you have to be 18 years old to subscribe to the children's content. There's a house in Florida called the Bop House. Bop is like a slang term kids are using for like a or whatever. There's a lot of OnlyFans girls living in there, but one of them was under 18 and they were waiting for her to turn 18 to bring her on to OnlyFans, and they were using Brand Army before that. They knew exactly what they're doing. It's not like a misunderstanding. Parents that are doing it and letting their kids use Brand Army, they're their children and profiting off of it. They're fully aware of it.
I have witnessed myself during my time of being in trafficking, of seeing how they collect the data, how they use that data to target not only children, but also buyers. It is very real, and it's very scary. And groups like, 764 are also manipulating these systems, and children are dying. Children are being told what to do and to engage in some terrible acts. And yes, these systems are a big problem, a very big problem.
I read recently a survey, and I found it really kind of depressing that younger Americans are increasingly de-emphasizing the importance of family in their priorities as for what they consider to be a life well lived or a purposeful life, that they rate numerous other things ahead of family when asked. And it seems to me that there again, if you're living in a world of consumed by social media and screen time and less interested in, you know, mom and dad and brothers and sisters, that, you know, that's the trafficker's ideal sort of scenario, I guess, right?
Yes, and I think we also, as parents, we see a parental growth in disinterest, right? How many moms and dads are we seeing on social media and TikTok and putting their own children out? I recently also heard about this brand ambassadors program that mothers are actually putting their teen daughters on, and the teens are about 13 to 14 years old. They're dressing scantily clad, and it's basically an OnlyFans for teenagers. Mm-hmm. And in order to subscribe, you have to be 18 years old. So it's almost like parents are also not just influencing children in this behavior, but they're pushing them to it. You know, when you're not spending time with your kids, when you're not engaging your children,
yeah,
and you're pushing them to, hey, go play with your video game, or hey, you know, go do this or do that, and you're not engaging them, then the world's going to engage them.
Right.
And I think that is an adult, millennial, Gen X problem that we need to address.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's one thing to put a electronic device in front of your child for a 2-hour plane ride to keep them distracted. It's another thing to make that your full-time, nanny or au pair or whatever you want to call it. And that's certainly, we see that too much of that as well. Well, you know, we're talking about the plague of trafficking and the battle against it. But, you know, let's focus on some good news. There is good news, thanks to Changing Destinies Ministry and the people who support it, both full-time and as donors and as volunteers. Recently, and during the benefit here in Pinehurst on November 8th, we were told about a matching gift campaign, which I'm happy to report that, and Kim, correct me if I get the numbers wrong, but an anonymous donor had put up $57,000 and put forth the challenge of, you know, having it matched. And I believe it was matched and then some. So you're talking about north of $115,000. Tell us a little bit about that and how that's going to make a difference.
Yeah, so we feel very blessed that when we went into the event, the gala, so the campaign lasted from the 1st of August until the 8th of November when we had our benefit, and it was a dollar-for-dollar match. And when we got to the event, we were about at $47,000, and we put out an ask that we bring it up to $57,000, which would have been raising $10,000 in that event.
Right.
And as you said, it exceeded that amount. So that money was critical to operational expenses that we have moving forward. We've had a little bit of time under our belt now running the shelter since March 3rd. So we're entering the end of our fiscal year, and we had a little bit better of an idea what our operational expenses would be. So we had some goals, and the campaign helped us meet a lot of the goals moving forward. We are in such a great community where people are providing for our ladies, and we couldn't be more grateful for everyone stepping up and doing what they can to help fund this great initiative of bringing healing and restoration to these people who have been abused and traumatized for so many years. So thank you, everyone who has participated in that.
And the other, you mentioned the opening of Rachel's Refuge, which for obvious reasons is in an undisclosed location. But this is a 5,000 square foot structure on a 13 acre parcel of land. It will, when it reaches full occupancy, be a home for 7 survivors of trafficking. You have 2 currently residing at Rachel's Refuge, with a 3rd on the way, I believe you said. But talk about a journey, you know, over a decade to get to the day the door opened. That took a lot of perseverance. I don't, most people give up more easily than that. But what do you see as the long-term impact of Rachel's Refuge, and do you also think we'll see more of them being built as we go forward?
I do. That's actually part of my vision, is to have more shelters. This is our first. On the 13 acres, we have 3 addresses. It's just very interesting how the property came to us. It's a beautiful property. the home that you mentioned is our main home, but we also have a 1,300 square foot home right next door to it that 100 years ago was a schoolhouse for the main house, which had was a boarding home for young women. And it became a private residence, but it's in disrepair. It needs funding also to renovate the little house. And once we're estimating about $225,000 for that, that will open up three more bedrooms, which will be able to take more women there. And then we have the third address, which we haven't even discussed what we would do with that. We're not there yet. But I would like to see transitional housing and other things when they graduate from the program if they're not quite ready to enter into affordable housing, that we would have a place for them to go, which we've seen replicated with other shelters in other areas with different types of shelters that in their program that the residents can participate in. And so I would ultimately like to see shelters pop up all over the place, because when you start researching this, you learn that there's very few beds to accommodate the mass number of people that have fallen victim to this horrific crime. There are domestic violence shelters that have opened up beds, and that's wonderful. And there are homeless shelters that some of them end up going to, but ultimately, because of the, and Christian can probably speak to this, the reason why our shelter is 24 months is because of the complex trauma that these survivors undergo that requires intensive case management and therapies and other things that a shorter program that doesn't have the longevity to give them an opportunity to do the healing. And our program also has a reintegration phase in the second year, trying to help them get employment, save some money, get a vehicle, a license, GED, college degree, wherever they're at, and affordable housing in the end. So a lot of work needs to be done. We've been rolling up our sleeves and trying to create a program where these women who come to us with all of the abuse can feel healed and loved and seen and be reintegrated into society where they can be successful in life and not see the recidivism that you would see if someone doesn't have enough time in the program. And Christian, I'd love for you to be able to speak to that because I think it's so important.
Yeah, absolutely. I had the privilege of getting to come out and kind of work with Kim before she opened the doors at Rachel's Refuge and kind of give her some input on that and the needs that not only I as a survivor wish I could have had, but the survivors that I've worked with so far, the needs that I know that they've had. And it is really important to have that trauma-informed piece because trauma is subjective, right? And these women need a lot of extra help. They need intense therapy. It's complex. Most of us have been sexually abused since childhood. And with that, it takes a lot of undoing, a lot of unpacking. And in order to stabilize and understand like that this is going to be permanent, that takes a while because you've always been told throughout your life, this isn't going to last very long. This is yours, but let me take it away. So that is the biggest part, is understanding that you can be stabilized, that stabilization is not only okay, but it's safe. And Kim is really doing a great job with that. One of my biggest things was, you know, just having one person believe in me, and I tell this story all the time, and that was my husband, Charlie. He was the first person in my life who had ever said, I love you. I believe you're smart. I think you can go to college. And that's all it takes. You just need that one person, and they're doing that. And I'm extremely proud of the environment that they have created, the safe environment they have created, and I've had nothing but just amazing feedback about the program.
That leads to a very important question, which is, if someone is listening to our conversation right now, or someone someone reaches the sort of the end of their rope in a trafficking situation, how do they reach out to you all? Is there a hotline? I mean, we have your website address, but how do they contact your organization, Kim?
Yeah, the best way is to go to the website. We do have a page where they can go on and send us an email. And that comes to our executive director's email. We answer those very quickly. We also have a referral button on there if they think they're interested in going into the program at Rachel's Refuge. They can self-refer. An organization can refer. So there's several different ways to do that. We are going to be posting a number very soon that people can reach. So we're working on that right now.
And the website is changingdestiniesministry.org. Is that correct?
Yes.
Changingdestiniesministry.org. I would urge you to go there for a number of reasons, certainly if you are currently a victim, but also you've got to go to the site to see the images of Rachel's Refuge and what a beautiful and welcoming facility it is, how beautifully furnished it is, and also the grounds, the landscaping is also stunning. And I understand that was donated, all the landscaping work as well.
Yes, we've had an amazing community that has just really stepped up. Everything, we haven't bought any of the furniture. It was all donated. The landscaping, for the most part, was. The landscape designer is one of the most renowned in our community who did her part completely pro bono, and it's absolutely beautiful, as you said, Steve, going on there. And we have pictures of the prayer garden that she created and some of the landscape, which is absolutely amazing. A lot of volunteers from different churches and organizations have come and put in the sweat equity to our shelter. So we feel very blessed with the support that we've received up till this point. We really feel like, because of the awareness and people understanding what human trafficking is and what these people are going through, want to create this beautiful home and environment where they can heal and be restored.
You know, one of the options that jumped out at me on your website under the category of how can I help, of course, you can donate money, you can donate time, you can, of course, bring a victim to the attention of the organization. All those things are very important. But the other one is you can hire a survivor. You know, if you own a business, you can hire a person and really get them on the path toward a new life and a new beginning. Is that prevalent? Do you have a lot of takers on that option?
We actually have had a couple. It's interesting, and what's so beautiful about it is because the individuals who have offered to hire them understand what they've been through. It's a benevolent environment and welcoming them into the workforce to learn a new skill set, and I think that's just beautiful. So they don't have to apply to employers who know their story. That is their choice. They can be completely anonymous in that. But if you're an employer who you are choosing them, they're going to know that. And so if you have a business and you want to extend a job offer to one of our survivors, there's a helping hands opportunity that you can take advantage of. And we have one employer right now that is definitely going to hire the girls. So I just think that's a beautiful way for the community to support what we're trying to do and be trauma informed, because there could be triggers and other things, and probably Christian could attest to that, how it's very important to have emotional support and folks who know if somebody is experiencing like a trigger, how to help them navigate through that.
Yeah, Christian, can you talk about that a little bit? You know, because eventually, and hopefully, the victims get into the world and have jobs and start families and all that stuff. But I guess there's always still a little bit of vulnerability to deal with.
Yeah, there is. And one of the best things I think are out there is just to remember that there are lots of resources, lots of ongoing resources. To speak from my professional opinion, I also work in a safe house. And one of the things that we offer is extended treatment services. So whether that be through a domestic violence shelter or a human trafficking organization, you could call 211. Just know that you can get ongoing services for mental health, community resources, peer support. They are all out there if you need them. And we can educate you not only in recognizing your triggers, but also how to address them, control them, because I went through that myself. It took me a very long time to adjust to life as a mother, as a wife, once I got out, because I didn't have that. I didn't have a resource or a number to call. So I can attest to the importance of that.
I think it's very, insightful, informative. Again, when you go to visit the Changing Destinies Ministry website, to focus in on your very articulate and very well stated purposes, your vision, your mission, and your values, and I'll just quickly relate them. Your vision as an organization to see sex trafficked women encounter God's love, experience transformation, and reintegrate into society. The mission is to provide a place of refuge for sex trafficked women in a Christ-centered residential program. And all of that is held together by your values, which are spiritual integrity, dependability, compassion, and humility. And of course, we could use a lot of that all over the place in this world of ours, but particularly with the individuals that that you're working with. Kim Nixon and Christian Bumgarner-Sullins, I want to thank both of you for joining us today and for enlightening us. And I'd also like to thank you for the work that you're doing, which is literally changing destinies. Thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you, Steve. Appreciate you having us on.
Thank you so much for having me today.
Well, as always, we thank all of you for sharing Saturday mornings with us. For David Hensley, I'm Steve Woodward. We're back next Saturday exposing deception, corruption, and rhino imposters doing what we do best,
taking aim.